As soon as Mrs. Field Mouse suggested it, Tiny ran. She flung open the door and looked out at the fading fall sunlight. It wasn't the glorious brightness of summer she'd longed for. She'd seen her last second of summer sun and hadn't even appreciated it when it happened. Funny how that went. Still, she stepped outside Mrs. Field Mouse's door to enjoy her last moments of sunshine. Dim rays poked through clouds in the gray-blue sky. A gust of cold wind nearly picked Tiny up. So much for warm sunshine. Tiny looked out at the dead corn stalks, hoping for any patch of green. Along with the sun, she was saying goodbye to the color green. The mole was nearly blind, so her trousseau was all in simple whites and grays. No green. But there was red. Just one remaining red tulip, somehow blooming well past spring and summer. Tiny dashed to the lone tulip. She hugged it tightly. Even though it was bigger than her, the tulip shook back and forth from her trembling embrace.
"Farewell, sweet sun," she cried, wondering if she'd ever be warm again.
I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales. Today, I'm telling the story Thumbelina, or Little Tiny, Hans Christian Andersen's literary fairy tale about a girl no bigger than your thumb who is frequently kidnapped by animals who want to marry her. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of Thumbelina features multiple kidnappings, the objectification of women, and unrequited love. Please exercise caution for children under 13. If you want to hear more tales, you can find episodes on your favorite podcast directory. While you're there, feel free to make our day by leaving a 5-star review. A new episode will release every other Saturday, so if you enjoy it, subscribe. Variations of the tiny person folktale are found from Africa to Finland to Vietnam, but the most popular variants are the English Tom Thumb and the Danish Tommelise, anglicized to Thumbelina or Little Tiny. These tales lampoon the dangers of being incredibly small and falling prey to those bigger than you. For example, Tom Thumb is eaten by a cow and finds himself in a cow pie. But Thumbelina focuses on the scarier aspects of being small. It's about the pains of being different, and how horrifying it is when just about anyone can overpower you and force you to marry them. Tiny's troubles echo those of oppressed women throughout history. Her size only magnifies her vulnerability. Thumbelina is the horror story of being at the mercy of everyone you meet. The passing children's laughter made Wilhelmina's heart ache. As she washed her dishes every day, she'd frown and scrub harder. Sometimes she secretly, guiltily delighted in the laughter, imagining the children were hers, a big, loving family. But they weren't. This angered her, and before she knew it, she found the dish she'd been washing broken in her hands. Damn. She had to clean this up. There was no one else who would. Wilhelmina plucked shards of porcelain from between soap suds, ignoring the tears puddling in the corners of her eyes. She had to do something. Wilhelmina wasn't getting any younger, and frankly, she was running out of dishes. Everyone assured her it would happen for her someday. But after decades of some days, she was still alone and childless. After she broke her last good dish, Wilhelmina decided to have a baby. But there was only one option available for women like her. She had to go to the witch. The witch's house was quite grand. Based on the colorful scalloped molding, Wilhelmina surmised she wasn't the only woman who had longed for a child. The witch welcomed Wilhelmina in and listened carefully to her plight. Her face was stony, but her eyes betrayed pity. Wilhelmina was used to this.
"I have set my heart on having a tiny little child," she declared firmly.
The witch nodded and led Wilhelmina down a hallway. She unlocked a door, and they entered a treasure room. This witch was definitely good at her job. The room was crowded with wedding rings, violins, Persian rugs, tulip bulbs, and so much gold, all presumably bartered for a better life. Wilhelmina hoped her mother's wedding ring would be enough. The witch picked up a jewelry box.
"Easy enough," she said.
Wilhelmina excitedly wondered what potion or lucky gemstone the box contained. The witch opened it, revealing a piece of barley corn, or as Wilhelmina knew it, chicken feed.
"Here's a grain of barley corn for you. Do not eat it. It's not the kind used by farmers. Put it in a flower pot, and you'll see what you shall see."
Confused, Wilhelmina accepted the barley corn, putting it in her pocket. It seemed like a scam, so instead of the ring, she only gave the witch 12 pennies. The witch thanked her and sent her home. At a loss, Wilhelmina planted the barley corn in a pot on her kitchen table and went out to buy some good dishes. Wilhelmina returned home later that day. To her surprise, the barley corn pot contained a full-grown flower. The large red and yellow tulip bud had the finest colors she'd ever seen. It was on the brink of blooming, even though it had only been planted this afternoon. Perhaps the witch had given her the wrong seed? Or maybe Wilhelmina's ideas about magic were wrong? She kissed the bud, overwhelmed. The flower bloomed open in Wilhelmina's face. It was truly a lovely tulip, she thought as she stepped back. But what was inside it? Some odd stamen? She used two fingers to push the petals wider and saw, sitting on the green stamen, a tiny girl. She was fully clothed and seemed nearly grown up, but the girl's whole body was smaller than Wilhelmina's thumb. It wasn't the child she'd been expecting, but a child was a child, and people like Wilhelmina didn't have options. She'd care for this little girl as her own. Wilhelmina named her new daughter Tiny, because she liked to keep things simple. She set Tiny up a cradle made of a walnut shell, with flower petal blankets. It was simply adorable. Wilhelmina even set up her nicest bowl as a pond for Tiny to boat in. She surrounded it with more flowers. Tiny loved flowers and made her a cute little boat of tulip petals with delicate horsehair oars. Tiny spent her days rowing around, chatting with Wilhelmina, and singing. Tiny had an incredible voice, soft and sweet, like butter whipped up with sugar. Occasionally, Tiny tried high notes. Some were so high, Wilhelmina couldn't hear them, but she knew what Tiny was doing when the local dog started barking. It was almost like a symphony. One day, Tiny sang so high she shattered a window pane. So precious. Wilhelmina opted not to fix it, because every time she looked at the broken window, it reminded her of her happiness. Wilhelmina's heart had never been warmer. Lily swore if her good-for-nothing toad of a son screwed up one more courtship, she'd keep letting him live in her home at the bottom of the marsh. And she'd still love him. Lewis had always been the slowest toad in the swamp, but in her heart, that made him special. And just because he lived life at a different pace than the rest of the toads didn't mean he'd never find love. She hopped faster through the village, trying to clear her head. She'd find him someone, a nice toad, or even a frog. Lily was very tolerant. One of the cottage's windows was broken. As she hopped past, Lily's curiosity piqued. She could probably jump inside, look around, and get out before anyone noticed. So she hopped on in. There were some nice-looking flowers on the table, and where there are flowers, there are usually tasty, tasty insects. Lily sprung up on the table, tongue ready to dart out. Instead of insects, she saw a tiny woman, fast asleep in a walnut shell, just the right size for Lewis, and probably single. Lily carefully grabbed the walnut. If the tiny woman woke up, Lily would have to tell her about Lewis, and she knew from experience that females were much more willing to meet her son when they hadn't heard anything about him yet. Holding the walnut cradle, Lily hopped out the window, through the garden, and down into the marsh where she lived. The little woman slept soundly through it all. Perfect. As Lily looked for a good spot to set down the walnut shell, Lewis saw her and approached. He croaked with pleasure when he saw the tiny woman.
"Shh, don't wake her," Lily told him. "Yes, she'll be a perfect wife for you, but we have to prepare a room for her so she takes to it kindly."
Lewis croaked quietly.
"She's as light as a swan's feather. She'll get away from us easily if we aren't careful," Lily told him.
They hopped the walnut cradle to a lily pad in the middle of a stream. Lily was pleased. This would work out swimmingly. Lewis looked down at his bride-to-be and couldn't contain his enthusiasm. Tiny awoke to an awful noise. Worse, the rising sun was in her eyes and the sky wide above her. She hadn't realized the sky could be that big. It was terrifying. Where was she? She climbed out of her cradle to look around, wobbling as the lily pad gave way under her weight. She stepped away from her cradle. Water rushed past her on all sides. She was trapped. Completely overwhelmed, Tiny broke down crying. Hearing the horrid croak again, she looked toward the water. Two ugly toads glared at her. Hopefully they weren't going to eat her. Not that she had any chance of escaping them. Maybe being eaten would be painless? The female toad bowed down before her.
"This is my son, Lewis. He shall be your husband, and the pair of you will be very happy living in the marsh. You'll be a beautiful bride."
The male toad, Lewis, croaked again. The female toad went on.
"He's not much of a talker. Many would say that's an asset to a marriage."
The male toad didn't look like an asset to Tiny. She couldn't help the tears coming down her face.
"I'll just take this for your bedchamber. We'll fetch you when it's ready."
She picked up Tiny's walnut cradle and swam off, followed by her nonverbal son. Tiny figured she'd better enjoy her last few minutes of solitude, but even that was not to be. Bulbous fish eyes poked out of the water, staring at her. She saw at least 10 eyes, each seemingly as sad as she was. Or maybe that was just how fish looked. She wasn't sure. One surfaced.
"Beautiful maiden, you mustn't marry the ugly toad."
"I have no choice," she cried.
"We'll rescue you," the fish said, and dove back underwater.
Tiny's lily pad started to sway. Oh dear, she hoped by rescue the fish didn't mean to take her underwater. She couldn't swim. The lily pad dipped just below the surface, and it was all Tiny could do to stay in place. Suddenly, the lily pad sprang up. As the lily pad floated downstream, she realized the fish had bitten through the stem holding it in place. How kind of them! Free from the awful toads, Tiny floated through a beautiful, strange land. Little swallows saw her and sang praises of her beauty. The birds just loved her. But as the lily pad continued downstream, joy faded and worry crept in. How was she going to stop? Could she even leave this lily pad? Looking around, Tiny realized it wasn't just birds watching her. Everything had eyes. And all these creatures, the birds, the butterflies, the minnows, were following her. Spotting a white butterfly above her, she had an idea. Tiny untied her sash and waved it above her head. With a few tries, she lassoed the butterfly. Startled, it flew faster, pulling her away from all of the other creeping animals. Now she was safe. Tiny sat down, only to be squeezed around the waist and flung into the air. Our story will continue in a moment after a brief message. And now, back to the story. Tiny kicked and screamed, but she'd been kidnapped by a giant beetle. She hated how tight it held her. She wondered if this was what it felt like for the butterfly tied to her lily pad, and realized that with no one to untie it, the butterfly would surely grow tired, fall from the sky, and drown. The view of the ground swinging back and forth nauseated her. She coughed, but the beetle didn't seem to care whether or not he'd imminently be splattered with the guts of a tiny girl. The beetle, in fact, seemed thrilled. It deposited her on a leaf, smiling. She didn't know what to do. There was nowhere to run. It was bigger than her, but at least it had stopped touching her. The beetle's massive eyelashes blinked at Tiny.
"I don't know who or what you are, but I've never seen an insect so beautiful. You'll make a lovely bride," it chirped.
"Not this again." Even though he had just landed on the large leaf of an oak tree, Schaefer felt like he was walking on air. The other beetles always said he was too weird, too impulsive, too vigorously shiny to find a wife. He'd prove them wrong. He'd just nabbed the best little wife in the woods. Or what would be the best little wife in the woods. She was crying again and didn't seem interested in eating the nectar he'd offered her. Next time, Schaefer would try harvesting it from roses instead of daisies. Even crying, she was more beautiful than any beetle he'd seen, and probably twice as interesting. He was just about to ask her to dance for him when the other local beetles buzzed up. Schaefer proudly bowed and motioned to his little wife.
"Perfect timing, fellows. Meet my wife. I've only just fetched her from a lily pad."
"So now you're married to a flower," Bert said. The other beetles snickered. "I don't know why you like her. She's not even shiny," Trick added.
"She's beautiful. Look at her dance. Dance." Schaefer commanded his little bride. She wiggled reluctantly. Schaefer thought she was beautiful, but somehow not as beautiful as before. Were her eyes small?
"What a thin little waist. How will she ever lay you eggs?" asked Roger.
Bert piped in.
"You don't want to touch those eggs. She's like a deformed pupa with only two little legs."
Schaefer had always wanted a family. He hadn't considered the logistics of breeding. Where would her eggs come out? The other bugs continued.
"Does she fly? She's a worm. Schaefer's married a worm. It's a worm. Worm lover."
The other beetles buzzed away, still laughing at Schaefer's ugly wife. She did look undeveloped and raw. Maybe his wife was no miracle, but a mutant earthworm rejected by her kind. She cried even louder now. Kind of annoying. It was too bad. Schaefer had liked her. But she'd have to go, just like his last few brides. He picked her up and flew her down to earth.
"I want nothing more to do with you, ma'am."
The beetle dropped the little woman on a daisy and flew off.
alone as usual.
The swallow marveled at the beautiful girl from high above, delicate like a bird, but with soft pink skin no female swallow could rival. There was nothing so precious as this tiny woman, and also nothing so terrifying. It would be so easy to embarrass himself in front of her and destroy everything. One wrong note and she might run away, or worse, forever banish him from her presence. The girl had a brutality to her. After all, she did harness and kill that white butterfly. He'd been watching her for nearly a year now. The swallow had first heard the tiny maiden sing when she lived in a walnut shell in a kitchen. He saw why the frog and the cockchafer had wanted her, though he himself would never entrap her the way they had. When she made her home in a field of flowers, he made his in a tree above. Some days he'd summon up his courage, spread his wings, and swoop over her flower. He planned out exactly how he would introduce himself, compliment her, and impress her with a song. But he could never actually make himself land. Often, he couldn't make himself leave his tree. Certainly, he would introduce himself tomorrow. But tomorrow, storm winds followed a harsh overnight frost. Time for the swallows to migrate. Before leaving, the swallow tried to find his tiny girl. He stayed back in the winter storm, swooping again over the field of flowers. Perhaps he could carry her to warmer places. She could ride his back, snuggle in his feathers. He blushed at the thought. If only he'd worked up the courage to say hello earlier, they could have made a migration plan, like the mated swallow pairs did. He wouldn't have to fly along cold winds, searching for a woman who didn't even know he existed. It was quite boring to be a field mouse, especially a widow. All her children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren were grown, and Mrs. Field Mouse lived alone in her den. At least she had stored enough corn for the winter. One of the stored stalks even looked enough like a toad when she squinted. It was almost like having interesting company. And there was always a chance her neighbor, the mole, might produce a single amusing thought before spring. She looked forward to it. Sounds like that day had come early. That knocking must be the mole. Mrs. Field Mouse answered, excited to hear his annual clever thought. But at her door was not the boring mole, but a human. Well, human was an exaggeration. She was the size of a field mouse, and blue around the edges.
"Please, may I have just a single grain of barley corn?"
the little woman begged. Mrs. Field Mouse analyzed her. She seemed fairly clean, and being such an oddity, this girl had to have some interesting stories to tell. Perhaps she'd have an interesting perspective on corn, or inspire Mr. Mole to think two clever thoughts this winter. At the very least, Mrs. Field Mouse could say she did a good deed.
"Come inside and join me for supper," she said.
It never hurt to have someone owe you a favor.
Tiny owed Mrs. Field Mouse a lot of favors. She'd eaten through half the stalk of corn in a matter of weeks and made her bed from the warmest feathers in the den, leaving Mrs. Field Mouse to sleep on the oily, flattened feathers missing hunks of down. Worse, she had no intention of ever leaving, saying her mother could not protect her and there was no need to return to her birthplace. After a few tense weeks, Mrs. Field Mouse finally came up with a solution. Marry her off. As it turned out, the mole's interesting thought for the winter had been to dig a passageway between his home and Mrs. Field Mouse's. It would be very easy for him to get to know Tiny. He was blind, so he wouldn't be put off by her unusual looks. And most importantly, he was incredibly wealthy. Yes, the mole was a perfect match. Plus, if she introduced the mole to his new wife, he'd owe her a favor. She invited him to tea, and prayed the marriage could be arranged before she ran out of corn. Mrs. Field Mouse said the mole was very learned, but Tiny found his conversation dull. She couldn't care less for soil composite or the mechanics of tunneling. She told him her stories and sang him her songs, but he spoke so disparagingly of her song's subjects, the sun and flowers. However, he said he cared for Tiny. She struggled to care back. The mole did have large rooms and a beautiful black velvet coat. He was the wealthiest of all the woodland creatures. It was only practical for a young woman to marry, and she needed to be married to someone of means. At least, that's what Mrs. Field Mouse said. Ironic, since Mrs. Field Mouse herself was now unmarried, her husband having died at the hands of a screech owl years ago. Tiny's own mother had no husband, and the frog lady who had kidnapped her was also single. What was the obsession of these middle-aged single women with marrying Tiny off? They must have known something she didn't. So Tiny agreed to accompany the mole to his residence to see these rumored extra-large rooms.
"Don't get into trouble, lovebirds," Mrs. Field Mouse teased as they left arm in arm.
In the passage, Tiny was quite impressed by the phosphorescent wood the mole held in his mouth to light the way. It reminded her of the stars, she said.
"Stars have no value. All they do is twinkle. Who needs twinkling?"
the mole said.
This wood here is useful. It keeps you from tripping over rocks and debris in the tunnel. Speaking of, don't be alarmed about the dead bird ahead."
Tiny shuddered. She hated dead things. The mole stopped and poked his long nose up against the roof of the passage. A portion of the tunnel's roof crumbled in, illuminating a dead swallow, but it was somehow still beautiful, retaining the black and blue feathers and shiny beak of a living swallow.
"Now you can see it. The winter preserved its body, so you can get up close for examining the aerodynamics of the wings," the mole said.
Tiny looked down at it, disheartened.
"How sad. The swallows had the most beautiful songs in summer. I wonder if this one sang to me."
The mole continued on, nonplussed.
"Awful pointless to be a bird. I'm glad my children won't be birds."
"How do you mean?"
Tiny asked.
"All they do is sing all summer, then freeze or starve in the winter. Not much use, not much learning. Mighty miserable, I say. Come along, no need to dally."
Tiny stroked the bird's feathers gently before hurrying after the mole. Our story will continue in a moment after the break. And now let's continue the story. Tiny couldn't sleep that night. The image of the dead bird and the sounds of a swallow's song played over and over in her head. She felt, at the very least, the swallow deserved a proper burial. Tiny set about weaving a blanket of flowers and hay from Mrs. Field Mouse's collection. A few hours later, she brought it down the passageway and covered the poor bird. She sang a gentle song of thanks and mourning, and gave it a hug and kiss goodbye, not only from her, but from every creature who had enjoyed the swallow's song. Could the bird still be alive and merely frozen? She listened more closely. It might be. Tiny covered the bird more warmly and ran back to Mrs. Field Mouse's home to surround the bird with more warm, dried grass and feathers. As she returned, the bird opened one eye. They stared at each other for a long moment. Tiny was incredibly aware of her small size and the sharpness of the swallow's beak. The swallow seemed to gulp down his words before finally croaking, "Thank you."
He looked like he wanted to say more, but remained silent. For weeks, the swallow recovered under Tiny's care. She was just as kind and careful as he daydreamed she would be. He said he'd caught a thorn in his wing, which caused him to fly slowly and get caught in the storm, and he fell from the sky and lost his memories after that. But that was a lie. In truth, he had circled the field endlessly in the snow, looking for any trace of Tiny before succumbing to the cold. He hadn't found her the way he intended to, but he had found her. Tiny, for her part, now insisted on taking her walks with the mole above ground so the swallow could recover in peace. The swallow didn't see what was such a problem with the mole, but Tiny assured him it was best if they never met. As Tiny nursed him back to health, he fell in love with her even more, but he couldn't say it. What if she laughed at him, or was repulsed, left him to die? His love stayed hidden in his heart. When spring came, the swallow knew he was ready to fly again. But before he did, he had to make an offer to Tiny, so she knew how he loved her. As she helped him stretch his wing, he mentioned he should be going back above ground.
"I'm so glad you're healed," she said.
What kindness. Now, if he could just ask her. They sat in silence. Each second, he willed himself to open his beak, to speak. But minutes passed, his words unspoken. They burbled in his stomach until finally he spat out, "Would you like to go with me? You could fly on my back and we could go to the warmer places, my home there as calla lilies like the ones you sing about. You only have to come if you want to. You don't even have to fly with me." He gulped nervously. She was quiet. What did he say wrong? Finally, she explained.
"Mrs. Fieldmouse told me I must stay here. She would be so upset if I left her. I owe her my life. I mustn't..."
"She wants to marry you to the mole! The mole!" he cried, emboldened by pain. Tiny's eyes widened at the show of emotion, but she held firm.
"She protects me. The mole will protect me too. I need them, or I'll be kidnapped by something worse. My mother let me get taken by a slimy toad. You don't..."
She didn't think the swallow could protect her. That was it.
"Farewell,"
he shouted, and flew out the hole in the roof, the one made by the mole so long ago. He'd ruined everything. It was beyond high time for a wedding, thought Mrs. Fieldmouse. The mole finally formally asked Mrs. Fieldmouse for Tiny's hand, and the mouse happily obliged. She realized she could make up some time by rushing the preparations, so she called in favors with 4 spiders and had Tiny assist them with weaving a silken wedding dress and a miniature trousseau. This was one occasion when the girl's small size was an advantage. Everything was coming together, except for the bride, who was coming apart. Tiny whined and cried constantly. With the engagement in place, she revealed that she didn't even like the mole, much less want to marry him. Mrs. Fieldmouse, naturally, admonished her. Tiny explained the mole planned for Tiny to spend all her days at his side, which meant she'd never see the sun again. Not a loss, thought Mrs. Fieldmouse, since Tiny's fair skin would likely burn and the sun was so hot. She could not understand the girl's whining. What was so special about a son? The son wouldn't feed her, and someone had to keep that girl fed. The mole's cellars rivaled none, and if Tiny wanted to live somewhere else, she should have left when she was the responsibility of Mrs. Fieldmouse and not obligated to the mole. She did, however, feel bad for the girl. So, the day before the wedding, she told her to put down her sewing and take one last look outside.
As she stood outside, watching the fading summer sun, Tiny cried again. Each shadow crept closer, growing harsher as the sun faded. One shadow crossed over her. She moved. But it followed. It grew bigger. She looked up. It was the swallow hovering above. He'd heard her cries and came to rescue her. And this time, when he asked her to run away with him, she said yes. The swallow flew Tiny to the warm countries where swallows went in the winter. There, neither of them would ever freeze again. He flew to the stunning, ancient marble palace overgrown with ivy and wisteria, where he and his fellow swallows made their nests. With Tiny on his back, the swallow had never been happier. He relished her slightly too tight grip on his feathers and imagined the life they would live together. The swallow imagined growing old with Tiny, singing in the treetops in perfect harmony, cuddling in an adorable nest they decorated with flowers together. They'd pick the most beautiful flowers. Speaking of,
"Look at those pretty flowers," Tiny said.
She tapped his wing in the direction of a broken marble pillar in the palace courtyard, surrounded by large white flowers. The swallow swooped down, soaring low over the blooms. "Pick your favorite and you can have it," he said. Tiny considered the flowers. She was finally making her own choices now, not obeying the desires of others. She'd live as his equal. Surely she'd make a fine bride yet. She pointed at the most beautiful flower, and he gently set her down in it.
"Away, ye monster! Find yourself another flower!"
A tiny man popped from the flower, brandishing a sword. The swallow flapped his wings in shock, flying backwards. When he got his bearings, he observed a tiny, transparent man, seemingly made of crystal, with butterfly wings and a golden crown. A fairy prince. An angry fairy prince.
"Away! Out of here!"
the fairy cried.
"Don't hurt him. The swallow rescued me. He's a friend,"
Tiny pled. The fairy observed Tiny, and the swallow noticed he looked at her like she was the most beautiful thing in the world, which she was, but the swallow didn't like this tiny man's intentions. The swallow wanted to speak out, to warn her, but he was paralyzed by fear. He could only watch in silent horror as Fairy Prince put his golden crown upon Tiny's head and said Tiny should marry him. Maybe this time Tiny would reject her suitor, say no, choose her own fate. But she said yes. The fairy prince attached wings from a dead fly to Tiny to make her more like him, and the swallow hoped she'd back out. Couldn't she see that the fairy prince was trampling all over who she was? That he thought he owned her? But she didn't fight back. Tiny even let the crystal fairy prince change her name to something he thought was prettier. Bearing a new name and wings, little Tiny, now called Maya, asked the swallow for a favor. He wanted to say no, but the truth was he'd still do anything for her. Tiny asked the swallow to sing her wedding song. He did so on the edge of tears. He should have spoken up about his love for Tiny sooner. As soon as the wedding was over, the swallow flew away and for years sung the bittersweet song of a beautiful girl who never thought for herself. Until one day he sang it to a writer who wrote this story down. Some people say the swallow represents Tiny's freedom. He's the only male character who never asked for Tiny's hand in marriage. He wishes she could live a free, happy life and make her own choices. The swallow appears when Tiny is on her own for the first time, and his wounded form follows her as she lives with the field mouse. He disappears when she plans to marry the mole, reappears when she escapes, and she loses him one last time when she sacrifices her identity to marry the fairy prince. Other people say the swallow represents Anderson himself, and, like his story, The Little Mermaid, Little Tiny is a tale of unrequited love. Tiny abandons the two characters said to love her, her mother and the swallow, without a second thought. Either way, Anderson's version brings an undertone of sadness to the folkloric tradition of tiny people. Not only is there the sad ending for the swallow, but due to her size, Tiny has almost zero agency. She does whatever the creature nearest to her tells her to, and only briefly flirts with making her own decisions. The lack of power truly is the darkest element of this tale. Thanks for listening to Tales. If you want to listen to more Tales, you can find us and subscribe on your favorite podcast directory or listen on Parcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, we'd truly appreciate a 5-star review. See you next time. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Ron Shapiro, with production assistance by Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Tales is written by Maggie Admire. I'm Vanessa Richardson.